AARP Indiana, committed to amplifying the voice of Hoosiers 50-plus at the Indiana State House on issues like the Hoosier Employee Retirement Options Bill. More at action.aarp.org/inhero.
The candidates for governor share the same stage. Is the campaign underway? Has RFRA hurt the convention business? The results of a new poll. Tax hikes win committee approval, John Dickerson quits the Senate race, and the controversy over police body cams. That plus the avian flu and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending January 22, 2016. Programming
is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the candidates for governor appeared on the same stage for the first time in the 2016 cycle. They took turns addressing the boot camp for new mayors. John Gregg got a big welcome from the local elected officials who filled a hotel ballroom. The Democrat did his best to take advantage of the situation.
Please, Republicans, sit down. Thank you.
Gregg lost a close race in 2012 and, without naming him, sent the signal that he intends 2016 to be a referendum on Mike Pence.
I'm a very pragmatic person. I'm not an ideologue. If you want someone that follows a rigid ideology, I want to be candid. I'm not your candidate.
When his turn came, Mike Pence made no mention of Gregg or the campaign, dwelling instead on high points in his record.
I'm so proud. I'm so proud of the progress that our state's made over the last 3 years. 139,000 net new jobs created by businesses large and small.
And the governor made no mention of LGBT issues, even though Gregg told the audience that his campaign is based on inclusion.
I know everybody's thinking that when I say inclusion, I mean the LGBT community, and I absolutely do. That time is long overdue.
How long can Mike Pence ignore John Gregg? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwanes, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Dan Parker, is this a new John Gregg?
No, it's not. It's a John Gregg who's more experienced, having gone through this in 2012. But this is going to be a different campaign. It's going to be a campaign because, Mike Pence is not going to be able to run on the coattails of Mitch Daniels. This is his record. He's going to have to defend his record, and that's going to be a difficult record to defend.
But on issues like LGBT rights, on hot-button issues, John Gregg and Mike Pence had the same stance 4 years ago. They no longer do.
Clearly, John has evolved on some issues, but this campaign is going to be about Pence and his record, and that's not a good record to defend.
Well, I thought this was a very interesting appearance by the two of them, because John Gregg clearly wanted to be the aggressor. He wanted this to be all about the campaign, and Mike Pence absolutely ignored it. Why?
Well, there's no reason for him to acknowledge it at this point. He does want to run on his record. He's got a good record to run on. A lot of things that he's accomplished, and I think that's what you'll see the majority of his campaign to be. But John, it's interesting because John didn't have the reputation of being check the political winds and see what way things are going before. But all of a sudden, he's the weatherman of this campaign for governor. To say that he's evolved on a lot of issues would be an understatement. So I think it's going to be a different campaign for a lot of reasons. And there's no reason to have the head-to-head campaign start until the television commercials start flying and one person starts making references to the other, then you're going to see the campaign fully engaged. And that's when the public starts paying attention, too. So it's way too early to do that stuff.
But I thought it was interesting that John Gregg wants to make this a confrontation. in January.
I think that's what you need to do if you're the challenger and you're facing an incumbent. You know, Indiana voters tend not to fire their chief executive officers. If you look historically, there are a lot. I mean, we didn't always have two-term governors, but when there were the constitutional changes and the revision in code that allowed that, we haven't turned a lot of them out of office. So you do need to draw a stark contrast, and I think there's a sense that there's a vulnerability that perhaps wasn't there because of RFRA and some of the other issues, and that's why you probably see this tacking to, I guess, what John Gregg's camp would call the more progressive
what others might call the left.
Yeah, that's right. But I mean, on that issue, you're right. He's tacking left on a lot of issues.
Indiana.
But
yeah.
That issue, against discrimination, as we've said many times before, he's got political cover. If anybody says, you know, you're too much of a weatherman or a weather vane responding to public sentiment, well, that's accurate in that case because public sentiment itself has changed so much, and a lot of other politicians, Republican and Democrat, have in fact changed as well. So I don't think that's necessarily a blow to be somewhat viable on that issue.
So John Gregg went to the LGBT issue on two different occasions in that speech. Is that going to be the biggest issue in the race for governor?
I think that that's where you draw the first stark contrast is with the LGBT issue. And to John's point, he has to do that because we've never turned out an incumbent governor since we've gone to consecutive terms.
Incumbent governor.
Right. We had
one appointed. Joe Kernan was
right. Governor O'Bannon died in office, but still, that doesn't happen. And so he has to. I think that's going to be the central issue. But I will make this caveat: we'll see what the legislature does, and the legislature could mitigate this or could make it even more of an issue. We'll just have to wait and see.
The RFRA thing, though, Michael, is the reason that you put your finger up. Pence's rigid ideology is what made him a national embarrassment, and now we just had the state of the state where there was no substance there. And that's the reason he's vulnerable, he has no vision, and he was a national embarrassment to us, and that's why John Gregg's going to win.
You know, well, first of all, you don't have all of the national influences, or we don't know what the national influences are going to be. We don't know who the Democrat candidate is going to be.
We know what the embarrassment
for
was.
For president. We don't have the Richard Murdoch
was him going
factor.
On TV and saying
we don't have the
Richard
Murdoch factor we had last time. We don't know what any of those external forces and all the clutter that's going on with all the other races. It's not going to be as big a deal as you think it is before this is over.
Last
Believe
year's
me
session
when I tell you.
Wiped the shine off of Mike Pence and his ability to lead.
Okay.
That's just wrong.
All right. Related issue. A new poll shows how the Religious Freedom Restoration Act continues to affect what people think of Indianapolis. The October Visit Indy poll taken in Chicago showed that only 43% of tourists agreed with the statement, Indy welcomes all. The survey also found that the view of the entire state is even worse. It shows that only 38% of those tourists believe that Indiana welcomes all. Here's Chris Gall of Visit Indy.
Yes, we can overcome this as a city. We can overcome this as a state. This is not insurmountable. This is something that we learn from. This is something that we're better than. And we firmly believe that the State House will do something meaningful. We firmly believe that our elected officials are taking this very seriously, and we're appreciative of that.
Mike McDaniel, what's the message in that poll?
First of all, I found it interesting that you picked that quote to lead into the story. I would have much preferred the quote from Leonard Hoops, the CEO of Visit Indy, who was quoted as saying, and I think more accurately, there are those who are convinced that RFRA had no effect whatsoever, and there are those who are convinced that the sky fell, and that wasn't the case. He said neither of those are true. So, as is usually the case, whenever you have the kind of hysteria that you had around this issue in the media last year, neither of those extremes happened in Indianapolis. They had virtually hardly any effect whatsoever on the convention business, and they're still bringing conventions back, including the biggest conventions they have who have signed long-term deals. So it's not the end of the world as we know it, and it's not, you know, everything is roses on the other end. It's somewhere in between. Now, what Chris Gall said, that what we have we can work with and make work going forward, is true. So, you know, I get a kick out of these, that everything happened and the world came to an end. It didn't. And that's usually the case.
What you didn't include there was the fact that Indianapolis, in terms of convention cities, was ranked second worst
of all the cities.
By a convention trade association on a yearly thing.
Okay.
And they
the only
Ferguson,
city worse than us
Ferguson.
Was St. Louis with Ferguson.
Because of Ferguson.
Issue.
Yeah. Because of their
comparing what happened this year, Michael, look, what happens 5 years from now when we don't fix this?
Well, that's an easy one for you to say, because 5 years from now you're going to – we'll check with you 5 years from now and see where
we are.
Well,
you know what? We had a great year last year because those things were booked 3 years ago.
That's a pretty safe thing for you to say.
Yeah. The fact is, the national impact was huge.
We just rebooked the Gen Con. We just rebooked all of those.
Stick your head in the sand and think that there was no impact related to RFRA.
We just rebooked the whole Future Farmers of America.
John, do they need help from the legislature still?
Who's they?
The Visit Indy folks?
They need clarity on the issue is what they need. And that's what I was alluding to earlier when I was saying it could be a big – RFRA could be a big issue in the governor's race, or it might be a non-issue depending on what the legislature does. Visit Indy and everyone else, and it's documented. They did lose business. The amount of business wasn't that great, but I think you make a good point. These things are booked years in advance, so decisions that are being made now 4 or 5 years from now, we won't know until we find out what business they don't have. So there's that. But I do think that they need clarity about what direction the legislature wants to go and where the state's going to go on RFRA before they can go out and make the full court press that they want to make.
The bottom line is you don't even want to be having this conversation if you're trying to attract conventions, right?
Oh, I think that's right. I mean, to Mike's point, it's not as if the convention center is sitting there, in mothball condition. It's people are still coming here and for the bookings that were done in advance. The problem or the challenge, though, for Visit Indy, This is a business that's so incredibly – a field that's so incredibly competitive. And in Indianapolis and in Indiana, we're not sitting here pointing to our sandy white beaches and the tropical breezes or the snow-capped mountains where you can ski a few runs after you get done with the seminar. We have to compete – I won't say to disadvantage, but everything has to go our way. So when you have any potential booker weighing two cities, and if it's, well, this one's sort of – number two in this year anyway to Ferguson and as a suburb of St. Louis, any little thing you can that's a chink in the armor is going to be a negative, at least short term.
Yep. All right, moving on. If you buy gas or cigarettes, you may soon be paying more under the road funding proposal that passed a committee in the Indiana House of Representatives this week. It's unusual in part because it's a Republican proposal. It calls for a $1 per pack increase in the cigarette tax and a 4 cent per gallon hike in the gas tax. It's a proposal that Republican Governor Mike Pence spoke against in the State of the State address, but it passed a committee with 8 Republicans voting for it, all 4 Democrats, and just 1 Republican voted against it. Here is Republican Tom Saunders.
This is a good start. I'd like to go a little farther. I bought gas for $1.43 a gallon over the weekend. I'd be in favor of a 10-cent gas tax increase.
There is a significant need, and what we're asking is enough money in this bill through multiple sources to stop the decline of Indiana roads.
And that's Republican Ed Soliday. John Ketzenberger, can the Republicans get this passed without Democratic help?
No, I don't think so. I mean, they, ostensibly by numbers they could, but it's going to be a tough sell because of such an election year, because the governor hasn't thrown his weight behind it, and because the Senate is very skeptical about this as well. So it's going to be a difficult sell. That said, it's an impressive bill. They should get credit where credit is due. It is a forward-thinking, forward-looking bill. It's got things deep in the bill that help with the process both at the state and local level. And I think that ultimately something like this needs to be passed. I'm not confident that it'll happen this year because it's a non-budget year, but it's the kind of framework you can see going into next year and being used.
The House Speaker and House Republicans keep referring to these as user fees. The cigarette tax increase covers medical costs incurred by smokers, and the gas tax is to help out the roads. Are they user fees or are they tax hikes?
Well, it doesn't matter really what you call them. I mean, depending on which segment of the argument you listen to, this could maybe is not even a debate about transportation and road repairs, but health benefits. You get some testimony saying this is a way to curb smoking. I mean, there are lots of different cross currents here in the debate, but what it comes down to is call it a revenue enhancement, call it a user fee, call it tax. It's whatever you call it, it's necessary revenue, as John suggests, to have this problem not just fixed in the short term, but have it fixed in a manner that can be sustained long term.
Okay, so the Democrat position is there's a $2 billion surplus. We can spend some of that before we ask taxpayers for more money.
Yeah, they want to spend it all over 4 years. They want to completely blow through the surplus, which is a program that's not going to fly. And this particular program, John Ketchberger nailed it. The Solid Day bill is outstanding. They put a lot of thought, a lot of research into this, except that they did it in the wrong year because you got Republicans and Democrats alike saying, not an election year, not me, I'm not doing that. And so you got that going against it. But they will come up with some funding for highways this year, but I look for the long-term fix, as you said, probably next year. It'll probably look very close to what this bill is. But there are bills that are going. Hirschman's bill that's put money in local roads, $430 million, passed 49-1 in the Senate. So that one seems like it's on a rail to go through there. So they're going to pass some money for roads and highways.
Well, these are one-time investments.
The long-term fix, as I said weeks ago, if you listen to fiscal leadership, it ain't going to happen until next year.
Well, that's the election year prescription. Do short-term fix, talk about long-term fix next year, right?
Because the governor's bill was just a short-term get me through 2016. This is a comprehensive long-term, and, you know, he couldn't lead on that if he tried. So you got to give Speaker Bosma a lot of credit for, you know, a comprehensive bill. The Senate bill.
But the Democrats may give him credit, but they're not giving him any votes.
They criticize it.
Well, look, you guys got super majorities. It doesn't really matter what we say. You got to pass it yourself.
Okay, well, that's good. You should tell your guys that.
Doesn't matter what. But your governor, it was a get me through 2016. Yeah. Well, look, that's all it was.
Look, he's got a plan that's got good money out
there. Some of the candidates have R behind him and some have D, and they're both trying to get the voters' favor, and a tax increase in their minds right now is not the way to do that.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, do you support a hike in the cigarette tax? Your choices are A, yes, B, no, or C, a dollar is too much. Last week's question, would you support a hike in the gas tax? 62% said yes, 38% said no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. John Dickerson suspended his underdog campaign for the Democratic nomination for the U.S. Senate this week. Dickerson said that his campaign hadn't been successful in raising money despite the hard work of supporters. Dickerson is retired after more than 30 years as an executive director for the ARC of Indiana and announced his Senate campaign in August, saying he wanted to focus on climate change, a strong economy, and voting rights. Dickerson endorsed former U.S. Representative Barron Hill, who is now the only Democrat seeking the Senate seat given up by Republican Dan Coats. John Schwanes, does that have any effect on Barron Hill's chances in November?
Only, I guess the conventional wisdom would suggest that by not having a primary contest, you can focus earlier on the prize on November, and you don't have to spend dollars in that sense. But I mean, as a practical matter, Barron Hill was going to win that nomination for his party. So maybe he has a little more money, the powder is dry, so to speak, when he can focus on the general election campaign.
All right. History will remember John Dickerson's campaign how?
As short and caught up by the updraft of support in the governor's race. I think the Senate race has not garnered as much attention as maybe they thought it would, and they were unable to capture enough dollars to sustain the race into the spring. So I think it will be remembered as an effort, an honorable effort, but one that couldn't find the lifeblood of money because of the attention on the governor's race.
All right. Does that way of thinking also cause money problems for Barron Hill?
Well, always removing a primary opponent, you know, should help you raise money. So we'll see what happens in future reports for Barron. But I want to kind of keep this focused on John Dickerson, who's a good and honorable man. It's just really hard to run for statewide office, particularly when that's your first run for public office. It's much more difficult, Michael can tell you, than people realize. It's a much bigger state. I just hope he stays involved in the process because he did generate a lot of goodwill from people that he did get in front of.
Yeah. On the Republican side, all of a sudden we got TV ads from Marlon Stutzman. Todd Young's coming out with TV ads next week. That campaign is becoming a real battle at this point.
Well-funded campaigns have the luxury of starting early. And when you've got the kind of competitors you have, three legitimate candidates in this race, that's the reason they're starting early. So they're doing it out of necessity. But I want to chime in. Dan Parker was absolutely right. Dickerson's a man of great character, and I hope he does stay involved because he's a wonderful guy. But you're right. He just didn't have the feel for the statewide campaign and realize how hard that is.
You also have to appreciate that he endorsed Barron Hill.
Yeah, and he's of that party. That's what he ought to do.
Yeah, but it doesn't always happen.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. A bill passed by a committee last week says that for the media or the public to see police body cam video, they may have to acquire a court order. The bill places a burden on those seeking the video to prove that its release is in the public interest. If police deny a request, it would be up to a judge to determine if the video can be seen by the public. The Indiana Broadcasters Association says the bill goes against the spirit of the Indiana Open Records Law. Here's Dave Crooks of the Broadcasters Association.
And we want police to have these body cams, let alone dash cams. But we don't think that a police chief or a sheriff should be able to make a decision to just keep these videos under wrap and never share them with the public.
But I think the goal is to have more officers adopt the body camera and to make it easier to get to it in important events or incidents like we've been seeing on TV lately. So I think we're all working in that direction. So I'm hopeful it'll get there.
And that's Representative Ed Delaney, a co-author of the bill, who says he's working on a compromise that weighs the interests of both the media and the police. Mike McDaniel, who has more clout, the police or the media?
Well, first of all, body cams are designed to protect the police and the public. Mm-hmm. And we want as many of them to have them as we possibly can. So it seems to me the more transparent we can be about this whole process, the better off everybody is. And I look forward to seeing what compromise Representative Delaney can put forward. It seems to be that because they've stopped moving this thing as quickly as
they took it off the calendar for at least 2 days.
Somebody is interested in what his compromise is. So I think everybody's looking forward to seeing what that compromise looks like.
But the first version of this bill is the police version.
Well, true. But it also came from a summer study committee where you had a lot of testimony from police chiefs.
Right.
You know, the West Lafayette police chief who came in to testify, and they've been very proactive in getting body cams because, you know, everything they did was caught on a cell phone. They wanted the police version of it. So, you know, this doesn't require body cams. It sets some structure, to make sure that the process is uniform across the state in keeping the information and how you can access it. So, I mean, this is a really good process that we're going for to make sure that, you know, we balance privacy rights versus let's not have a Chicago situation.
Well, and that's just it. You want to make sure that in a situation like we saw in Chicago where a police officer is accused of murdering a young man, that you can see the video.
You know, I think it's important for the reasons that have already been talked about, because it does need to be a statewide. You don't want this by, you know, local dint or by an individual making a call on this. So that's an excellent start to the process. I'll be curious to see what the compromise is, too. But the other part of this, in addition to public safety, is the credibility question. And I think that's equally important here. Part of the reason for the body cams is to show the public all sides of policing. Often the only side of policing we see is when there is a major problem, like a shooting or something like that. You know, we don't want these to be used as promotional pieces either, but it gives people, you need to have access to it so that people can have faith in their police the other way around.
That's a problem, because as the bill was filed, it simply would have set the stage for more suspicion. Because even if you were someone in, you know, you're on the camera, you're the defendant,
right.
I or my attorney could in fact see it, but not necessarily get a copy of it. I could see it twice under the initial statute. But can you imagine the controversy that would spring up if somebody says, they did this to me, but I can't show it to you because they'll only
let me see it.
It is a problem. But I do have faith that Ed Delaney, his instincts, I think, on these issues are genuine and correct.
He's got a lot of experience.
I just wanted to say it was good to see former Representative Dave Crooks back in the building again.
Well, I think that's right. He's president of the Broadcasters Association. Finally, the Indiana Turkey Farm, that's the center of a new bird flu outbreak, says it's working with state and federal officials. All 60,000 turkeys at Farbest Farms in DuBois County near Evansville were euthanized this week. A six-mile quarantine around the farm was also set up. A different strain of bird flu killed tens of millions of chickens, turkeys, and other birds last spring. It forced the Indiana State Fair to ban them from exhibitions. State officials say the bird flu does not pose a food safety risk. Dan Parker, nevertheless, will that affect the amount of turkey in your diet?
There is other white meat, but, I mean, this is a serious problem that could have, you know, serious impact to, you know, the Indiana agricultural community. There's a lot of, businesses that rely on trucking, processing.
Quick response by the Pence administration.
Federal government ensures that these farmers are covered for this so that everything will be good economically.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Dan Parker, Republican Mike McDaniel, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shello of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.